Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay, right, before we get into the podcast for this week, just want to say that we have opened up another league for you to join on the ESPN Fantasy Rugby site. So ESPN Fantasy Rugby are doing a fantasy league for the World Cup. We've got a league on there. When we did it for the Six Nations, we had the biggest league in the world. Yes. Over 600 people. We want to get even bigger. We want to see if we can break 1,000. So join up. We're going to have mega prizes, which we'll be able to offer details on that in due course. But get yourself signed up. Phil's got the details.
Yeah, do you remember last year when we did the little jingle for the...
Oh, yeah, it was 81262, wasn't it? And I mean,
81262, hear me now.
81262.
We should just really stop saying 816262 because people are going to get 81262 in their head. And that's not the code.
What is the code, Phil?
The code is not 81262.
So no. Our private league code, you make your team on the ESPN Fantasy Rugby site and then you go to join a private league and the private league code.
Not quite as catchy. It's 1124-3597.
Oh,
we should find out if that was. So say what it is again.
1124-3597.
They've made it a bit complicated this time, haven't they?
How do you do a jingle for that?
Oh, I'm not going to be able to do a jingle for that. What I will say is we will post a tweet and we will pin a tweet on our Twitter account. So even if you're not on Twitter, if you go to twitter.com/rugbypodcast, we will make sure you can see the code right there. Join us, join our league, win some top prizes. We'll be able to have a bit of banter and give you some credit and pick up on which teams are doing well through the World Cup. It'll just add another little bit of spice to the World Cup. But I think we're ready to pod now.
Ready to pod.
Let's just get straight into it then. Hands in, pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod!
It's 12 days until the Rugby World Cup, and that's on the day that we're recording this, not on the day that you're listening to this. It is getting so ever closer, and thank you very much for downloading or listening to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast with JB.
Good day.
With Philip.
Hi, Tim.
And with me, Tim. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter, you can listen on iTunes, and you can listen via the Acast app, which I'd highly recommend downloading. But also, a little bit of news, we have got bashed our heads together, looked at the schedule for the Rugby World Cup, and we are going to be doing more than one podcast a week. I can officially say that.
Hopefully substantially more.
During the Rugby World Cup. So I would say the easiest way to keep an eye on that when it comes to World Cup time is following us on Twitter if you're on there, and definitely doing this, subscribing on iTunes, and then every episode will just get automatically downloaded to your phone. You don't have to check back. But good, big times. I'm well excited. JB, I can imagine you must have mixed feelings as a Welshman waking up today.
Mixed. Why? What would the other feeling be?
it was pretty negative yesterday to be a Welsh.
I can't imagine despair and sadness, maybe.
And as a pair of Englishmen, Phil and I are feeling a lot better than we were this time 2 weeks ago.
Well, I tell you what, I learned a very valuable lesson this weekend, which don't wish ill on other teams, because when you do, this happens. Basically, these injuries are my fault.
We'll get onto the injury woes in just a minute, but a few little stories from around the game. And former rugby player Jarrod Hayne has made the San Francisco 49ers 53-man squad for the upcoming NFL season after a pretty stellar performance in pre-season.
I'm amazed by this. I mean, I thought he'd do all right in camp and, you know, all the rest of it and be a nice little talking point. I thought he had no chance whatsoever of making the team. But there you go.
But not only making the team, but his pre-season stats are some of the best in in the league, in the NFL.
Oh, this could be a record for the use of the fact button on a podcast. We're only 2 minutes in. Carry on, Phil.
I can't remember the exact ones.
Oh,
facts then.
But highest average yards per carry in pre-season.
Fact.
Top five total yards made.
Wow.
In pre-season.
Fact.
And a few others as well. So he's really impressing.
Well, I would just couch this with a couple of things, which is, one, the pre-season in NFL means absolutely nothing. I mean, it really did. I mean, they start off with something like 100 odd players, and you know, they whittle it down to the last 52.
NFL preseason is what JB would want the Rugby World Cup warm-up matches to be.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Meaningless and not involving anyone important.
Yeah, so, I mean, typically you get the starters playing like the first quarter of the first preseason and the first half of the third preseason, but that'll be about it. The reason it's surprising to me is not because of the running. I mean, we all know he can run and he, you know, can handle the ball. Not that he needs to pass it, but, you know, he can. The reason it's surprising is that for all the other things a running back needs to do, like blitz pickup, quarterback protections, things which sound completely alien to us, but actually for an NFL running back are absolutely critical.
But he was obviously a fan of the NFL before, so he's got a decent level of understanding and the necessary size and athletic ability, and it's just combining all that together,
well,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, as well, apparently he's friends with Reggie Bush. Now, Reggie Bush is the running back for Detroit Lions, now San Francisco 49ers. He seems to have followed him around because he went to camp with Detroit and then he went over to 49ers. So I'm sure that has some sort of part to play.
But good luck in the season, Jared Hayne. And I will definitely watch that with interest.
Just one last thing. Jared Hayne, if he's on the team, I think the minimum that he'll earn this year is about $500,000 to $600,000. So, well worth a move.
Whoa! Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah. So, the same happened with Hayden Smith of Saracens.
Who was New York
and
Jets.
And Menelik Watson, who was a shot putter.
Yes.
Who went over to the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, he's been cut now. He got cut a few days ago. But Hayden Smith earned like three times more than Saracen's salary.
Wow.
In the 1 year with the Jets where he caught two passes.
And there's a guy that was a proper good shot putter who played rugby in Surrey, and he was in the Wasps Academy or something like that. And he's gone on.
Akoya.
So is Watson from Manchester?
Yeah.
Watson from Manchester, Akoya's from down London way.
Yeah, Lawrence Akoya.
Anyway, we'll watch Jared Haynes and maybe more. Maybe if it goes well, maybe the NFL will be taking a look at some more rugby players.
Oh, absolutely. Well, there's a big push.
JB!
It's unbelievable.
We apologise for JB's phone.
I'll turn it off.
Another interruption. That's all you're saying, rugby players in NFL.
Well, because all the college system is so heavily scouted, everyone knows who's going to come out of the college system. So there's been a few instances recently where they're looking far and wide for new talent. So I think Indianapolis Colts picked up a defensive end from Kenya. So they're sending the scouts far and wide now to find the best talent possible.
The lad from Kenya was the one who played a bit of rugby in New Zealand and South Africa, wasn't it?
Yes, he's a monster.
Yeah.
Absolute monster.
What one rugby union player would you say would have the best chance that hasn't been selected?
Historically or
no,
currently?
Just like of the teams, that say of the players that will be at the World Cup, if you were an NFL team and you were going to go, I'll pick you, who would you pick?
There's got to be someone just...
In the World Cup?
Athletic ability, someone like Surveyor or North or Folau.
Surveyor, North, Folau would make great tight ends.
Because they're all big,
and
they're
they can
quick,
do everything.
They're
JB.
I switched it off.
Yeah, so Surveyor or George North as a tight end for an NFL franchise. There we go. Right, another headline then. And Sam Burgess has been given a nickname by his England squad teammates. Do you want to hear his nickname?
Let's guess it. Burjo or Sammy.
Big Sam.
Big Sam.
Proposition B.
Those are all the names we've used for him. But from now on, as James Haskell revealed in a little video with some of his England teammates that they were doing, kind of a behind-the-scenes thing, this is the new nickname for Sam Burgess.
If you have been on another planet, you probably would have missed out on the fact that Sam Burgess, a.k.a. the Cowhead, has made it into the England squad. Every headline has been about that. And how exciting is it to be part of this 31? Obviously, good set of boys, as you can see. Absolute banter flying around already.
Lads.
it makes me cringe a little bit.
Lads.
Banter's flying everywhere.
So once again, let me just reiterate.
A.k.a. the Cowhead.
Sam Burgess, cowhead.
So we've had Sam Burgess criticising Haskell about his chest. We've had Haskell calling him the cowhead. And they're both quite similar in stature, aren't they?
They are,
big
yeah.
boys. One might be more athletic than the other. One might be more gym strong. Both alpha males. I wonder if this is kind of like a phony war, a little bit passive-aggressive, all in the name of banter, but there is a little bit of seriousness going on.
I think if you follow either of their Instagram accounts, there's quite a lot of like pictures just catching up with my mate James for a coffee. Me and Big Sam going for a bite to eat. I think there's a bit of a bromance there.
There is a bromance brewing for sure.
Absolute banter flying around already.
Lads.
Mutual respect.
Definitely. And finally, there is some injury woes. We'll get to the Wales ones in just a second, but there's rumours flying around that Andy Goud may retire from rugby before he gets to pull on a London Irish jersey and continue his incredible journey.
I hope not. And you should hope not too, because Andy Goode's the reason that your brother's going to win an Aviva title.
Well,
he's going to kick him all the way there.
Andy Goude, I hope it's not true. I really hope it's not true. Get well soon, big man.
What's the injury that he's sustained?
I don't actually know.
I don't know if he's injured at all.
Yeah, he's been injured in pre-season and had to have an operation. And
struggling to get back to fitness. He's 35.
I want to say shoulder, but I don't know.
No, I don't know.
But Wales, the injury woes are mounting for them. And in light of the game against Italy, Reece Webb and Lee Halfpenny are serious doubts for the Rugby World Cup. I mean, in recent podcasts, Phil, we've been talking about, and JB, we've been talking about just how many injuries Wales are already carrying.
Yeah, well, within the squad, you've got Samson Lee, who won't be fit for until the second or third game. Alan Wynne-Jones, who is a question mark after his knee injury last week. They've taken 5 second rows to cover for him.
That was a great point that you made on the last podcast. The fact they've got 5 second rows, that can only mean, really, as far as I'm concerned, after you pointed it out, Phil, that Alan Wynne-Jones is a serious doubt.
In my mind, he will definitely miss the first couple of games, but they're hoping he'll be fit for the later group stages.
You think he'll miss England?
It's the second game, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you'll miss England.
I don't think you'd take 5 second rows if you thought Alan Wynne-Jones would only miss one game.
5 second rows plus James King, who is a back row who can comfortably play second row.
Yeah.
Are you worried, Jay?
I genuinely am.
Liam Williams, who had foot surgery over the summer and is yet to feature.
And Jonathan Davis, who isn't around.
Yeah, Jonathan Davis isn't in the squad.
Injuries are... I think about injuries in the same way I think about suspended players. I hate injuries so much because all I want to do is see the best players on the field at all time.
Yeah. Completely. Like, it would be very easy as Englishman for Phil and I to go, yeah, brilliant, this is going to help us. But, like, you want to see the best players at the World Cup.
I was so disappointed. Like, I know how it feels to get injured early on in a season. Not to the same extent, but it must be absolutely devastating. You could see Jamie Roberts when he was doing the like half-time and full-time punditry. He looked absolutely gutted because of his like important teammates and his actual mates.
And he's an actual doctor, so he could diagnose it from the gantry.
Just shaking his head going, that isn't good.
Yeah.
Trust me.
That's exactly what he said. He just said, it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
Well, it's not broken. I can confirm that much.
For Reece Webb?
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
That is what they were saying yesterday.
That's pretty amazing that it's not broken because unfortunately for everyone, Phil made me and him a nice bowl of homemade guacamole and some little chips to dip in it. But it felt like it was coming back the other way because they insisted on replaying the Reece Webb ankle, what looked like an ankle break, again and again and again.
Oh, it's horrible.
Can we make a deal that TV broadcasters, if there's a serious injury like that, just warn us that you're going to show it. Show it once so that people that want to see it can see it. People that want to just look away can look away.
I do want to see it so you can understand how bad it is, but just once. Yeah. And like you say, warn.
Yeah, we've got Sky Plus, haven't we?
When they were showing, like the first half, when they were showing just like, you know, the little montage of the best bits, they were showing it then.
I know.
And showing him on a stretcher getting gas and air. That is not part of the montage. That should not be anywhere near that.
So true.
It was a terrible game. Let's talk about that later. But it's a terrible game. And Reece Webb, it's really unfortunate it happens. The Lee Halfpenny one, you could see coming from a mile. So he'd already got clattered for a high ball.
Yep.
And people said, oh, look at the strapping on his knee. Oh, look at that bangy talk. Take him off.
Yeah.
He is possibly the most important player because he kicks everything. You know, if you can't commit a penalty against Wales, probably in your own half and maybe even a bit beyond,
yeah,
because he's there. And now he's not there. It was ludicrous not to take him off early doors. And we're not even seeing little Matthew Morgan yet.
Changes the dynamic. Like you say, it changes the dynamic of the Welsh team completely. On the flip side, could there be an argument that, assuming these injuries pan out as they are and there is no Lee Halfpenny, and maybe Liam Williams might start a fullback, let's say, will that change the dynamic of the style of rugby that Wales play? And could that be loosening up, be a good thing?
I feel that we are, Liam Williams adds a lot more tenacity in attack. I think he's a lot more adventurous going forward, certainly. But he doesn't have the positional awareness of Lee Halfpenny, and he doesn't have the boots.
The boot can be covered by Bigger, who is a very good kicker.
Short range, though. There was long range attempts.
He's a very good... above average kicker.
Definitely.
The problem with having Liam Williams is it means you have to carry Cuthbert. Mm. And Cuthbert had one of the worst games I've ever seen from an international winger.
Well, there was another winger who had a very, very bad game this week too.
That wasn't Johnny May, was it? Was it JB?
Well, no.
We'll get on to that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get on to that.
Deal with Cuthbert.
Cuthbert was an absolute shambles, an embarrassment, in fact.
Cuthbert, 5 runs, total metres made.
2?
8.
Oh, my word.
Turned the ball over twice and 5 attempted tackles, only completed 2 of those. So 40% tackle.
Oh, and the missed tackle. I think he knocked Dom Day out of the way or something.
He did for the try.
Oh,
Did he miss the tackle for the try, but he bumped away a second row who could have actually made the tackle.
They should have brought in players from outside the squad, you know.
And he gave the intercept. Well, they did bring in players.
Moriarty had an absolute barnstorming.
I thought I saw Moriarty.
Moriarty and the hooker.
And Christian Day. Christian Dacey.
Christian Dawson.
Dacey, yeah. Anyway, and it wasn't a convincing performance at all, although Sergio Parisse, what a man. Stealing balls when Wales looked like they were set to score on their own try line. He did 2 turnovers on their own line, Parisse.
Oh, was that Parisse's turnover in the mall as well? Where someone just reached over. Yeah. There's a ball there.
He is just ridiculous. Other than, I said this yesterday, I think, other than New Zealand, I don't think there's another team in the world where he wouldn't be the best player in their team.
He's very, very good. I'll give him that.
He made more metres than any other player this weekend. With ball
because
in hand.
He had the interception.
He did make 80 yards with the interception.
Yeah,
what a guy.
The guy who played really well in that game was actually Scott Williams. Scott Williams looks
He did.
I wonder how much, if they could trade, how much England would trade to get Scott Williams. Because we've got Jamie Roberts. Mm. We might look at a good trade for, I don't know,
you can have Ben Morgan. I know you don't need him. You've got Felipe Faletau.
We need a fullback.
Or you need a prop. One of our props.
You can have
Marla. It's fine. Have Marla. We'll have Williams.
You wouldn't swap Marla for Williams.
You can have Dan Cole on the performance of his performance at the weekend. You can have Dan Cole.
No, well, let's get serious now. I will trade you my. I won't now. But essentially, if I was to trade Scott Williams, who would you give me?
I think we could do without a prop, and Wales need props. It's an area of need for them.
Right, so I'm going to say you can have one of our props.
You can have Sippers, someone not even in our squad.
Don't need him.
Foden, if you need a fullback.
Yes, we'll take Foden and we will take...
And
we will take...
Someone else out of the squad.
Vunipola.
Foden. No,
which one?
Foden and Matt Mullen. Two players outside the
Matt
squad. Matt Mullen and Ben Foden.
Yeah,
take him.
I'd make that trade.
And we'll have Scott Williams.
Done.
that highlights the strength of the England squad. And finally, conversely, with Wales, who put in a very average, very boring performance. I was nearly falling asleep on Phil's
sofa. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever.
It really was one of the worst international games. And the atmosphere in the Millennium Stadium was appalling.
It was
so
terrible.
Like a municipal swimming pool.
When Reece Webb was down with his injury, they started playing music and stuff. And do you know, you've been into a nightclub where, on the outside of the nightclub, they'll make people queue to give the impression that there's people inside, and you queue and you get in and there's like 8 people in there and the sound's bouncing off the walls. It's really echoey. Yeah, it was like that in the Millennium Stadium.
Yeah.
Like,
it wasn't good.
But it's the Millennium, like when we went to watch Wales Island in the Six Nations that was one of the best.
Did you?
Do you not remember that?
No, I didn't go.
Yeah.
Didn't know you went to it. Okay, go on.
You had the offer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the best atmospheres I've ever seen in a sporting venue. It was absolutely incredible. And then the difference between that kind of game and
they should
the,
never
the fixture.
Have played it. They should never even considered playing that fixture. And to put out some of the big names, what if George North got a slight graze to the head? That's good.
It does make me nervous every time he goes into contact. But he does look like he's back to his best.
Yes.
I'll tell you who else looked like a completely different team. Wales were disappointing. England, that's what we needed to see as England fans.
I'm not sure
ahead
you're
of
right
Fiji.
There.
I'm not saying it was perfect, but that was the response. The first few minutes set the tone of like, all right, this is a different England team than the one in France, where it was lethargic and slow and not getting over the gain line. Suddenly there were players running onto the ball at pace. They were getting over the gain line. It was quick ball. Ben Youngs was finally moving the ball quickly and was making
good decisions. I don't disagree,
but
there's
still
some really worrying things. So 5 out of 5 of the first lineouts, England won.
They won 100% lineout.
Yep. But
yeah,
the first five
bit
was
scrappy.
So scrappy.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them came off the back and then bobbled on the floor and it came back to England's side. It's an England win.
This is where Phil's love of stats can sometimes not tell the full story, because numbers alone don't tell the whole picture. And yes, on the face of it, you go, oh, they've sorted their line-out problems out. But no, like you say, it was...
Not even close.
It was still not scrappy. And the scrum, two against the head at international rugby with England.
Yeah.
That's unheard of.
That is really, really weird.
Not even against Ireland's front line, front row.
Yeah.
The two wingers look good. Watson is magical. I love that guy.
May.
Let's just talk
about
May.
Let's talk about Johnny May. Before you carry on, Jay, let me just remind everyone of what JB has said in previous podcasts. JB has said Johnny May is overrated on a number of occasions.
He's a one-trick pony. Okay, one hell of a trick. It's a great trick. But he is a one-trick pony. Okay, so he goes in for that try. You know, you've got to score the try. Don't take anything away from him.
He bounces off Tommy Bowe.
Well, that's it. I mean, that was a horrendous attempt at a tackle by Tommy Bowe.
It was, but it was because, and this is something that would be concerning for Ireland, Ireland's defensive shape for the past couple of seasons has been superb.
Yeah.
Tommy Bowe was out of position.
He was.
They were defending 5 yards off the line, but Tommy Bowe was actually stood on the line behind Jarrod Payne. So he had to sprint into the line, and that put him out of position, and he got his head in the wrong place and he got bumped. And that is what was a bit worrying for Ireland.
I completely agree.
That lack of defensive shape.
I also think Ireland put a lot of emphasis in defending the narrow channels. And I'm not saying really narrow. I'm just saying if you spread it wide against Ireland, you will find gaps occasionally on the wing. And I think England found that plenty of times. If anything, they should have done better.
Oh, for sure. I mean, England could have been... And I think Shane Horgan said it at half-time. He said England should be 25 points up.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get that many opportunities in tight World Cup matches. So that's a massive area, which I'm sure Stuart Lancaster and the England squad will be looking at.
I don't necessarily blame May for that. I think with a little bit of better distribution, decision-making inside of him, they would have scored more. But, you know, that did Youngs just throw it forward and he caught up with it?
Youngs threw it forward and he caught up with it. He's so fast that he can do.
But here is my point about Johnny May. Phil said Johnny May that he scores amazing tries week in, week out.
Yep.
Which would surely make him the best player in the world. So he doesn't do it week in, week out.
Semantics, JB, semantics.
He does it occasionally.
What I said was he is consistently outstanding, which I believe he is. And he doesn't have to score tries every week. The step where he had 2 yards to work in and he stood up, he slipped, and then went round the outside of him was magnificent.
He's very exciting. Yeah. I'll give him that. He's
both him and Watson.
And I can't believe that what we're talking about today on the podcast, I would never have predicted that we would be talking about England and saying a little bit worrying in the scrum, the front row. That's a couple of teams we've been pumped in the scrums and line-outs. But our wingers are really exciting.
Yeah.
I'd never have thought that we're talking about that as Englishmen.
I always wonder if the England squad need to settle down a bit, because they have been rotating a lot and... They just don't seem to have that consistency. And one of the commentators said, well, both these teams are rusty. They shouldn't be. This is their third international game. And for Ireland, it was their fourth international game.
Well, there is a bit of a difference. And then one of the commentators, I think, and I said to Phil, Stuart Barnes just made an excellent point there.
Wow, what was his point?
Even a stop clock's right twice a day, though.
Correct.
His point was that Ireland haven't got to be firing on all cylinders for a month. England have got to be firing on Friday, the 18th of September.
Yeah.
Mm.
England go Fiji, then Wales. Whereas Ireland warm up like
Canada, and then England
Canada,
have Australia.
Then Georgia.
And then do England have...
England have a break. England have Uruguay, and then Australia last.
I don't understand why Ireland have gone for four pre-seasons when they should have gone for two or even one and then used the actual tournament to get into
Which
tournament
is
shape.
Kind of what New Zealand are doing. They had the Rugby Championship, then they've had a nice long, month-long, five-week break, and then, because their group stage is just the warm-up, they will just be cantering. They've got Argentina first up, and then after that it is
I'd love
easy.
Argentina to turn them over. I would love it.
They won't.
I know, but I would still love it. No, I wouldn't love it, because that messes up everything else, isn't it?
New Zealand
go second in the group.
Yeah.
Everyone else thinking they're going to have an easy ride by coming first in the group.
Yeah.
You'll see teams throwing matches and all sorts.
I've got this. Right, okay. We've just this second been tweeted to @rugbypodcast, and I want to share this with you. I'm going to show you a picture. So this is a new rugby convert on Twitter who sent us a picture. And what it is, it's halftime during the England-Ireland match, and there's Alex Payne chatting to Clive Woodward and Shane Horgan. He's quite a big fella.
Mm.
And Will Greenwood's there as well.
We met his ex-girlfriend, Tim. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, we did.
Yeah.
She was lovely.
Sure.
And then there's Johnny Wilkinson stood in front of the analysis truck. And on the screen it says analysis. But where this photograph's been taken, there's one letter, there's a couple of letters that have been that Johnny Wilkinson's head is obscuring. And the ones that aren't being obscured. You see.
Very good.
He's missing out the Y and the I. And the S and the I. So you get A-N-A-L-S.
Well, that is top analysis, if ever I've heard it.
Lovely anals, Johnny Wilkinson. Well done. Right. I don't know how to move on from there. So JB, what I'm taking from this is you're quite lukewarm about England. I was much, much more encouraged. Like, and one observation as well, and I feel better about England with a back row including Ben Morgan and Tom Wood than James Haskell and Billy Vunipola. Now, I know Billy Vunipola's excellent impact and he's a great player, but Wood... Over Haskell, particularly, you've got a rugby brain in there and not just brawn. And I think that made a massive difference.
I do think Wood is the better player, though. I think Wood is a magnificent player. But then Haskell is he's got that incredible man strength. So
yeah, but Haskell and Vunipola just strikes me as an unbalanced back row, and it's just kind of battering rams and grunt. Well, no, that's not what it's about, though. And I think you saw. With the way that the England back row operated, that Ben Morgan was making good offloads and making good decisions, and Rob Shaw was just doing the game he always does. But then you've got these guys that are getting quick ball because they're reading the game so much better. And who did we talk about last week as a great player?
Oh, Tipperick.
Tipperick, a guy who's got a rugby brain and the difference that makes just reading the game, having the sympathy for what's going on.
I know I keep saying the same stuff over and over again and people don't listen to me, but one day you will. And... The England players, we don't talk about them as world-class, really. I mean, there's one or two, like we say, Marlon might be the best. I think they would be world-class under a different coaching regime. I just don't think that the system or the coaches or anything gets nearly the best out of these players. So I wouldn't worry too much about the back row. I'd worry more about the actual setup itself. But they'll do all right because they do have good players. And we just demonstrated with the Welsh comment before, you've got so much depth and so much talent. They've got to do something. But I just don't think the setup's good enough.
Where do the last couple of weeks leave Ireland? If you were an Ireland fan, I mean, they would have been a lot of people's dark horse to win the World Cup and do the best out of all the Northern Hemisphere teams.
I guess, yeah, because Smith is the polar opposite to what I think of Lancaster. Everyone says, oh, Smith, great coach, all the rest of it. I've not really seen a great Ireland team.
But like you said, Tim, they don't have to be. This is the closest to a full-strength team that they've put out, but it's still not a full-strength team.
Yeah.
They were unlucky to lose Conor Murray in the first half, and that did change things because of the way that he kicks and controls the game. I wouldn't be worried. I still think Ireland have got a very, very good chance of making the final. I still think they'll win their group, and then they've got an easier run.
I mean, they're playing England, and they've got a World Cup around the corner. I'd expect a better performance. I expect a markedly better performance. It's not like they're a bunch of amateurs or they don't care. It's a professional team preparing for... what could be their best shot ever at winning a World Cup. I thought they just looked pretty rubbish, actually. They had the one good performance against Wales, and everything else since has been fairly downhill.
Yeah, but the performance against Wales was both of their second teams. Mm. It was not even close. There was two or three players that might make both first teams.
Yeah. Scotland had probably, of the weekend, I know they lost, but I would say along with England, the most encouraging of performances over the weekend. Excellent defensive effort away in France, and they showed some attacking intent at times.
Well, they are rapidly becoming a dangerous team. Like, I would not underestimate Scotland.
No.
Coming out of the England-Wales group, you're going to either see South Africa or you're going to see Scotland. And Scotland, I thought, was going to be a walkover. Not anymore. I mean,
no.
You're losing a few players or something and you've got an off day. Before you know it, you're talking about Scotland as semi-finalists.
The most impressive thing from Scotland, their backs are very exciting, but the most impressive thing was the way that their forwards handled the French pack, the monstrous French pack. Their scrum was superb.
Solid.
And there was a time, last 10 minutes, when Scotland were a man down and France had four or five scrums on the Scotland 5 metre line, and Scotland repeatedly held them.
And they obviously fancied it.
And they had penalties in front of the sticks, and France went for the scrum.
Nice.
And Scotland held out. It was really, really impressive.
Good 5 to 10 minute scrum battles, reset, yellow card, replacement, reset. I think it's glorious.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. Like, I love a good driving mall. Really encouraging for...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
For Scotland,
They have still only won two games in the past year.
This
past
is true.
12 months.
And so you've got to temper your thoughts. Right, so we're going to decide between us now, and there's three of us, which is a good number for democratic decisions. But going into the World Cup, now we've seen everyone in the warm-up matches and what you know of them beforehand and what you know about their schedule and whatnot. How do you... Let's rank the Six Nations teams in terms of favourites to go the furthest in the World Cup. 1 to 6. It might be easier to start at the bottom. With Italy?
Italy. They did put in a good performance against Wales, a solid performance in a dreadful game.
Yep.
But Parise does so much for them.
I kind of think that Italy's biggest strength is people don't know much about them. Because it's not like they play the All Blacks every summer tour and every autumn. I mean, they might see them once every 2 or 3 years. And it's the same with all sorts of the hemisphere teams. So if they've got one thing going for them, it's that they're fairly under the radar for a... Is it a Tier 1 team? Do you class them as a Tier 1 team?
Yeah.
On the cusp, yeah.
Yeah, you Tier say 1, the, Tier 2.
If you say the Tier 1, the Six Nations plus the Rugby Championship,
yeah,
that's 10. That's would be probably my Tier 1.
So
maybe Fiji.
Is there anyone that stands out as a number one to you? For me, I'm very, very... I am biased, but trying to put that to one side, I still think home advantage and the factor of Twickenham puts England as the... But then they got schooled by France.
They absolutely got schooled by France.
But that was all of those players, their first game for 4 months. For me, Ireland, I still think, have the best chance of the home nations.
Yeah,
of
Ireland,
going.
France, then England, then Wales, Scotland and Italy.
I'd put Ireland, then France.
I'd put Ireland, England, France.
Yeah, I'd
France
would
just put
England.
One good performance against England. That performance against Scotland, they won it at the end when Scotland had a man
but
in the
bin.
But
it's a World Cup, isn't it? And they might just throw a few silly offloads and away they go. Before you know it, they're in a final and there's 3 points in it. Yeah, it's the French way, isn't it? I mean,
it's France and Ireland. Whoever wins that group has a massive advantage. Because if you're second in that group, you play New Zealand.
Yeah.
And then if you're lucky enough to get through that, you play South Africa.
I really hope to see some massive upsets.
That is a meat grinder of a run, isn't it? My God. So we're going Ireland, England, France, Wales, Scotland, Italy.
Ireland, England, France, Wales, Scotland, Italy. Yes.
So what we're set, and if you read into that, you're saying Wales are going to struggle to get out of Pool A.
I think.
What do you think about that, Jay?
Those injuries.
Well, if you asked me on Friday, I was very buoyant about Wales' chances. Now I'm not so sure.
Not like you to flip-flop on an opinion at all, JB.
Well, you know, you're missing one of the best fullbacks in the world and one of the...
England are the most tournament-ready team after home match against France. England are in disarray at their away match.
But, that's basically exactly what's happened. You know, look, Tim, when the facts change, so does my opinion. I don't know what you do.
All right.
So... Yeah, on Friday, I'd have said we've got a great chance. And now we're missing our goal kicker, one of the world's best fullbacks. And also we're missing the Pro 12's Player of the Year, which means nothing.
And the top scorer in the Pro 12 last year.
Without kicking?
Top try scorer.
Top try scorer, yeah.
Considering he missed probably 8 to 10 games of the season.
Exactly.
That is pretty impressive.
Yeah. So... it's a real, real blow. And also, isn't it so ironic that the two positions to go down, or the two positions most likely to be filled by Signors Hook and Phillips?
Oh, that is the one thing you can say for, and you wouldn't wish ill on anyone, and we want to see the best players at a World Cup.
Excuse me.
It's all right, it's quite all right. when we wish Reese Webb well and hope that he recovers in time, whatever. But if he doesn't, then World Rugby and the Rugby World Cup will just get that little bit sexier.
That's right.
I'm a glass half full kind of guy, Tim. And you got to look on the positive side of things. And just one last World Cup for Mike Phillips to get him to see him in that. It's an awful Wales.
It's an awful Wales.
But just see him on the pitch one last time.
Stressing his stuff, chest out.
Yeah.
Like he owns the show.
Lad.
Running over back rows.
Yeah. What do you want to say about Mike Phillips, Sam Burgess? Lads.
isn't that James Haskell?
No, that was Sam Burgess. This is Haskell.
Absolute banter flying around already.
Lads. All right, quick break from this then. And I'm going to get the little sound effect up because we have got another stash update. Stash. And up until this point, we had 9 out of the 12 kits for the Aviva Premierships forthcoming season. But with it the weekend, they played some of those warm-up games and various pre-season tournaments and stuff. We now have the other three. I should have a couple of weeks ago mentioned Worcester's kit, and there have been some Worcester fans getting in touch at Rugby Podcast on Twitter saying, "Oi, why haven't you done mentioned our stash, the Worcester team? It's quite nice, actually. I quite like it. You've seen the new Worcester kit. It's lovely.
You got it there, Phil?
I'm trying to find it.
Oh, that's a picture of Marcel Garvey. That must be a really old kit.
Marcel Garvey. Still playing somewhere in France, apparently.
Is he?
Yeah.
Occasionally I go on Wikipedia and scroll through all the French teams and look at their squad makeup just to see, look out for old names.
Wikipedia's not always up to date because...
What?
Because one of the ones I found was Dan Luger's apparently still playing in France. No, that can't be right. That can't be right.
But I can't find any sign of Rocky Elson playing at all. Except from Wikipedia, he was at Toulon until very, very recently.
There's a picture of it.
It's quite nice.
It is
quite nice, actually.
I like it, yeah.
How would you describe that? It's quite busy.
Stripy. No, it just looks right. I mean, I like the two very soft shades of blue and then yellow detailing. Yeah, I can deal with that.
Yeah. Decent. Sale Sharks have got their new kit. Now, I was quite a fan of their last kit with the thick blue and white hoops.
Yes, but they did have that shark detailing.
The fin coming up from the waist.
On the bottom hoop. But their new kit is kind of a mixture. It's got a bit of hoops. It's got a bit of thin stripes going on.
Sale have got a lovely, lovely badge, the Sale FC badge, with a little, one of those little straw hats. What do you call them? Not like a hay bale, but you know when you get all the hay together and you make a little hay stack type thing. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
No, they've got a shark on their badge, haven't they?
No, Sale FC.
Oh, Sale FC.
So they had like the heads of corn or whatever tied in.
Oh, right, OK, yeah.
That was a nice badge. The shark has nothing to do with Manchester, and the kit is, kit is horrific.
Landlocked club with a shark as a motif. Yeah,
near the ship canal,
I guess so.
The shirt's all right. So it's got one white hoop across the chest where the sponsor is. Then it's got some thin white stripes as you go down. The one thing I would say about this is, on a rugby player, that'll look good. But again, you put that kit on fans, and those thin stripes, which get wider as you go down the torso, that's going to make you look.
Which
love
kits?
Handles galore.
I like this.
One of the kits, I think it's Japan, have got narrower stripes the lower you go.
Well, so it makes you look like you've got a V of a body.
Exactly.
This is the opposite.
Well, right, this sail kit's got three different shades of blue. It needs one shade of blue. It needs one shade of white. It isn't difficult. It isn't. And they've got a nice traditional badge. Why they go with these sharks is beyond me.
I like this kit. I think it's really nice.
Maybe a training kit or something.
Look at Cipriani's athletic figure there. His nice broad shoulders and his narrow waist.
It's a nice cut. Don't get me wrong. It's not like the...
On fans, that'll look awful. That's all I will say.
Maybe it's just a good incentive to get the fans into shape.
Yeah, maybe that's exactly right. But I don't like it. One bit.
Talking about...
Maybe a tiny bit. No, not one bit.
Talking about horrible physiques. There was a 10K run near the gym that I go to this morning.
Oh, 10K
God,
runs.
Some of the physiques, they are awful.
And also, some of the sanctimonious people doing 10K runs as well.
I wouldn't say that. But...
I could literally do a 10K run right now with no training whatsoever. It's full of people who work in offices who don't do exercise, full stop, and they think that you should be impressed that they can be bothered to run 10K. Most humans can run 10K without even thinking about it.
Okay, moving on. That's all right, it's fine. Newcastle Falcons have got a new kit.
I like this.
Oh, let's have a look.
It's very simple, which I think you'll appreciate, JB. I like it. It's very, very simple, black and white. They haven't gone too busy with it. In fact, grey. I'm not sure about the shorts. They've got kind of a fade from black to white with grey on the side of the shorts.
Do you know what the problem is with Newcastle?
It's the kit is made by Gilbert.
That is problematic, of course.
Is it Gilbert or is it Orion?
Maybe it's changed.
Every team you can think of, really, you know exactly what their kit is, don't you? So Gloucester is cherry and white hoops, Sale, white and blue hoops, so on and so forth. We all know what these teams should look like. I kind of think that Newcastle have lost their way a bit. I mean, were they always just in black, or did they at some point have stripes on?
They often had more white on it.
Yeah, more white.
And they're thin white stripes, hoops, very thin white hoops when they won the Guinness Premiership back in the day.
And they have strange detailing. So they've had purple detailing or pink detailing in the past. They've had green detailing.
Yellow. They had a lot of yellow.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Do you remember? Yeah, I was looking it up today. They used to have Adidas in the late 90s.
That was cool.
It was cool, but they also had the Newcastle United badge.
Yeah.
Rather than a Falcons badge. Because they were, I don't think, were they just Newcastle Rugby? Or they weren't the Falcons back then?
See, I think Newcastle need to re-establish their identity a bit. And this is probably one of the reasons I don't like them so much. Why can't we, as three rugby fans, put an actual description to what their kit should look like?
Well, but
other than it's black, yeah, that's the one.
Unless they are leaving space for another main shirt sponsor, what I do like is their shirt sponsor. They've got it twice: one just on the front of the shoulder, on the front of both shoulders, and in the middle, which means they've got three logos for their shirt sponsor. But it's very small, so the whole body of kit they've got no sponsor on. The actual torso of the kit has got no sponsor.
Oh, no, this is an old one, Jay, that I've got up there.
Look there, right. There. See, they've got, it says Fairstone there and there and there. But so they've got three mentions of the shirt sponsor on the shoulders and above the crest, but they've got nothing on the torso, which I like.
That is actually quite
It's lovely,
shirt,
that shirt,
We're looking at an old one here. Phil's just pulled up an old one where they've got, the majority of the chest is black and there's a few white stripes. It's made by Adidas. I think that's a nice kit. They should try and get back to that as closely as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And with the old badge as well.
And with those Football World Cup 1998 Adidas Predator boots.
Adidas Predator.
Oh, Beckham ones. Now you're talking. That Johnny Wilkinson and David Beckham did an advert for.
Yes.
This is the last thing that I'll mention about this. But badges. There are so many good traditional badges, and hardly anyone has them now. So, for instance, Tigers have got a tiger. But if you see the original club crest of Leicester, it's absolutely stunning. And I think this should be this might have to be our next campaign. Original club crests back.
Why do they have to change things? It was better in the olden days.
These campaigns are getting more and more tenuous.
What?
I'm not sure about the club crest campaign. I love the campaign, and we made a massive difference. We have made a difference to not seeing people wearing trainers in promotional shots for new kits, and that we have actually changed that. We should not quit while we're ahead. When there's a campaign to get on board with, we should get on that campaign. But I think there are other more worthy ones, like having a two-tier Six Nations, for example. That's the kind
not
of
worthy. We don't want that. Look at that, Phil. Look at that. That's a beautiful kit.
The old school.
We just pulled up the gold star Leicester Tigers rugby kit with the light green thick stripe, red and white. Thinner full hoop. And the original club crest. And I tell you who have a beautiful club crest? Northampton. They've got it sorted.
They've still got it though, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
They that do.
Nice. Now, it would be easy to draw a little stick man with a halo, but no.
Well, they do have that, but just elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's great for you. But when you're on your first team match shirt, club crest.
Yes.
I like it. Right, we've just mentioned Newcastle. Go on then, Phil. What we're going to do now is rattle through, because we've been going from top to bottom in last season's Aviva Premiership, and we have been selecting the best all-time team. And once again, just like London Irish, I know that lots of Newcastle Falcons fans have been getting on board with this on their own club forum, and someone mentioned the fact that we were doing this, so they've been making some suggestions there. But it's now time to select Newcastle Falcons' best team ever, with the caveat, in the professional era. Here we go. Let's rattle through this then, Philip.
Okay, front row.
Heyman.
Heyman, obviously.
Oh, standard, yeah.
You know that when he went in 2008, he was allegedly the highest paid rugby player in the world.
Yes,
that year.
Really?
Yeah. Newcastle basically mortgaged the entire place to get him there for 2 years.
Fact.
The entire city of Newcastle.
So
Heyman, obviously, is tight head. Hooker, I've gone for Ross Nesdale.
Who?
He was New Zealand born, but Ireland international hooker.
Right, okay.
He played there for 5-6 years.
Okay.
Late 90s, early 2000s. Who was the most common one on the forum, Newcastle forum?
Oh, wow.
And then as prop, as loose head prop.
Yes.
Shoot out between Nick Popperwell, Ireland and British.
Oh, he was good.
Ireland and British and Irish Lion. And World Cup winner Marius Hunter, who's South African, 1995.
There's a lot of old names already. You sort of get a vibe about where this 15 might be going. Second row, then.
Only one of those has played in the last 10 years.
I know one of the second rows I hope you've got in there.
Gareth Archer.
Yeah. An absolute... I played against him when he played for Bristol. The guy is one of the biggest men
really?
I've played against.
He was a fantastic mute.
Absolute mute.
Archer's a quality player. They've had some really good second rows.
Mark Andrews is one of my all-time favourites. I love how hard he is.
Another South African World Cup winner.
Yep.
Who, I think when he retired, he was the top capped South African forward.
Is that right?
When he retired, obviously he's been surpassed.
I remember him captaining, because England were very good at the time, he brought a huge pack over to Twickenham. And in the anthems, I don't think they lined up. I think they went in a little semicircle so they could sing at each other.
Nice. Who made your row?
Well, you tell me. There's those two. There's Doddy Way, who is an outstanding Scotland, British and Irish Lion, and another British and Irish Lion, Jeff Parlin.
Oh, yeah.
Who had
Jeff
seven or eight.
Andrews and Archer.
Andrews and Archer.
Yeah. Andrews and Archer for me.
Yeah. Back row.
Back row. So, Dawson, I think, should be in there.
Yeah.
Six.
Superb player
Six.
For them.
Pat Lam.
100%.
At seven.
Oh, yes.
And then eight.
Eight, I'd say, Pat Lam.
Would you have him at an eight?
Yeah, he played
open side.
He played eight for Northampton in the Heineken Cup final and all throughout the season. And also, I think he played eight for Newcastle.
Who did you have penciled in at eight, Phil?
Well, a shootout between a few. There was on the Newcastle fans forum, it was between Colin Charvis, Dean Ryan and Alistair Hogg with the mentions.
See,
most
I was about to laugh at Colin Charvis then, because he went to Newcastle after a year off. Apparently he was being paid by ex-Welsh internationals just to train to keep in shape.
Really?
So he had a year off, he couldn't get a job with the Ospreys, I think. Something silly happened and they eventually got picked up by Newcastle. And I laugh, but actually I think he turned out pretty well for for Newcastle after it's all said and done.
The fans seem to have a good like for him.
Let's go for
and
it,
also,
then.
He can play seven. He's actually played international seven.
International seven,
so we've got an interchangeable back row there.
Yeah.
Into the backs then. Now, I reckon this is going to be pretty much, with maybe one exception, it's going to be, or maybe two exceptions, it's going to be reeling off the list of people that were in that team back in the day that won the Guinness Pro 12 or whatever it was at the time. Not Guinness Pro 12, whatever.
Guinness Premiership Guinness in 98.
Yes.
Okay.
So it'll be, what's it, Gary Armstrong at scrum half?
Gary Armstrong,
nice.
Yeah. At scrum half. Scrum half was like, it was pretty much just him that was that was mentioned.
Yeah. Wilkinson at 10?
Now, 10, they've had some superb.
Rob Andrew before him.
I was thinking Mark Wilkinson.
But Rob Andrew and Jimmy Gopperth would get into a lot of teams.
Yeah,
he would.
But Sir Johnny has to be.
Oh,
here's a question for you, right?
Yeah.
With these 15s, do you want just the best 15? Could you, like, move one to outside centre, Andrew at 10,
if we wanted,
Gopperth at 15?
If the best option would have been Gopperth moving back to 15, then we'll come to that.
But here's another thing for you as well. You only need one kicker. So does Gopperth get in at 15 if you've got a... I'm trying to think of a Ryan Lamb character playing at 10 who can't kick.
Well,
yeah. But fortunately, Newcastle have got Johnny Wilkinson doing the kicking.
If Wilkinson goes in, I don't think you can have Gopperth.
Centres. But that's fine. We'll come to fullback particularly. I think they've got a few good fullbacks as well. But they've got one particularly amazing fullback that I can think of. But we'll get to that. Centres.
Go on.
Jamie Neen's got to be in the conversation, right?
Yeah, he's in the conversation, definitely.
Flood?
Nah.
No.
No.
Good Lord, that we're reeling off some names here.
I've got four in the conversation. Noon, Meyer Hoffler.
Okay.
New Zealand centre. Matt Tate. Because when he was at Newcastle, I know since he's left Newcastle he's had injuries and inconsistency, but when he was at Newcastle...
He was very good.
He was outstanding. And Tom May, who is...
Oh, Tom May.
Tom May, who is Newcastle's...
It's probably got to be Jamie New Tom May, hasn't it?
Well, Tom May is Newcastle's top premiership try scorer and top premiership appearances.
Well, let's just put it this way, right? Noon and May came up together from very young age, and those young backs were always kind of penciled in to be like the future. I never thought they came close to achieving what they should have, especially May and Noon.
I still think it's the best that they've got two England internationals there, and they were both involved in Newcastle in their best time. They both gave them some great years, and I think they'd be your best two centres that have played in the professional era at Newcastle.
Tate. I don't know.
Alan Tate.
Yes, Alan. Oh,
Alan
goodness.
Tate was a good, very
Alan
good player.
Tate.
He was, yeah.
You could have the two Tates, Alan Tate and Matt Tate.
Oh, wow. Phil, you're a back. You pick Phil. We don't know what
we're
talking
about. And the Australian Scottish people, Leslie, what's his name? He was a very good player for them.
John Leslie.
Yeah.
You pick Phil.
I would go... Definitely Tom May.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's ridiculous. But
Tom May was outstanding. He went to Northampton. He got his England caps there. He went to
England
Northampton.
Caps? How many England caps has he got?
Eight or so.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Don't you dare question the stat man. Go on, Phil.
I've got a feeling May hasn't got any caps.
Carry on, Phil.
Because
we know JB's going to be wrong, so let's not waste time.
He has got only two Saxons and two. So Jay isn't wrong.
But he's not exactly right.
Jay isn't right.
Yeah. All right. So
Tom May inside, Matt Tate outside.
Nice. Okay, cool. Wingers. Now, let me predict that it's going to be Inga Tuigamala on one.
Yes. You could also put me in the hat for centre, but I think there's more competition in the centre. So
and then who makes your other wing, Phil? This is your position.
I would have to talk about Sanotti.
I would as well. The ones that were getting mentioned on the forum were Underwood and Bentley were mentioned a few times.
Bentos!
I would put Sanotti
I think
ahead.
So.
The Archbishop of Benterbury. that sounds really dodgy. Anyway.
And then
Matt Burke at fullback.
15.
Matt Burke, best player they've ever had at that club.
What? That's Wilkinson?
No, sorry.
So Johnny.
Well,
Pat Lam.
Him and Johnny Wilkinson.
And Heyman.
Carl Heyman.
All right.
And Mark Andrews.
What on earth, Tim?
All right. In the top three players they've ever had at that club.
Top five. Definitely.
He's in the higher echelon of Newcastle players, okay? Can we agree on that?
He's definitely their best fullback ever.
Yeah.
There you go. Were there any other fullbacks?
He'd be a contender for one of the best fullbacks ever, along with like Serge Blanco and
Well, his arguments say he wasn't quite as good as Chris Latham. You could say that.
Yeah, both asked that. He's in the conversation for the best fullback ever. Christian Cullen and Jason Robinson.
He was pretty good. Yeah. I think that's probably one of the most fun teams we've got, especially in the backs, because there's just that many names.
Yeah, some real depth of talent there.
And that concludes our all-time 15s for the Aviva Premiership.
No, it doesn't. We've got one more.
Worcester.
Worcester and Leeds could have one as well.
I don't want to do Leeds.
Should do Richmond, though.
It's just picking one.
They were only in the professional area for about two seasons.
Yeah, but have you seen who they had?
All right, if we do it... No,
we're not doing Richmond.
Okay. No, move over.
We need to get a list of all the players that we've picked and then pick our all-time 15 from the list.
So an all-time Premiership... That's basically just going an all-time Premiership 15.
Yeah, but I wonder if it'd be different from just an all-time Premiership 15. Because we've got a selection process. Does that make sense? And Bristol. I mean, Bristol would be fun because they had loads of good players.
We'll take a call on what we do next. Let's have an off-air discussion about it. What you've got to think about it is our next podcast is the World Cup warm-up. It is the World Cup preview podcast. I don't want to be getting bogged down in Premiership stuff, frankly, for that. It is all about the World Cup next weekend because it is the 18th of September and it starts 12 days from when we're talking now. It is going to be game day for England. It's exciting times. And so I think we'll hit pause on that and we might return and do some other clubs in the future. But just to remind you, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, we will be doing more than the one podcast a week. So subscribe on iTunes, download the Acast app and listen there. Follow us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast and cannot wait to get into it. If you have any ideas for things that you'd like us to do during the World Cup, then also get in touch. What we're thinking is we're going to do some slightly different sounding podcasts where we do it from JB's rugby lair.
Yeah. The...
in his basement with his massive telly, and we might actually record podcasts immediately after matches. So we get them up as soon as we can following some of the home nations matches, and so we can give our response and get your thoughts. So we'll definitely be wanting you to get in touch on Twitter and tell us what you reckon.
And I think there's probably going to be one or two impromptu Periscope sessions if they work. So watch out for that.
Yeah, definitely keep an eye out for that. Now, there was some other rugby that was going on over the weekend. The Pro 12 has started again. Well, yes. It started last week, right?
It was
this weekend proper.
Weekend was the first round of games. Ulster, impressive showing.
Good.
Did that?
It's hard to sound.
Cheers, Tim.
No. But I mean, if the Aviva Premiership had started this week, I'd be equally as not fussed about it. It's not because it's the Pro 12; it's just because it's not the World Cup.
Yeah, but the Pro 12's different, isn't it? It's very special, as in it's a league.
Special. When you say that, you're saying that as a criticism. Very special.
It's very special. I mean, it's the only league in the world which survives primarily without any good players.
So, well, they're missing 107 players from the World Cup.
How can you tell the difference? It could be any weekend. It's not like, oh no, the Pro 12 shorn of all its stars. That's just what the Pro 12 is. It's a bunch of kids. anyway, what happened in this week's Pro 12?
Well, the only game that I've watched any decent content from is the Ulster game, who got a 4-try bonus point victory at home to Ospreys. Andrew Trimble playing, looking very good. Stuart McCloskey also looking very good. And they score Luke Marshall as well. They got some. Ulster do genuinely have some good names.
Yeah,
playing.
Yeah, you're right. I did see the try from what's his name, the centre,
McCloskey.
Yeah, and that was the power of the man.
Yeah,
absolutely awesome.
And the try, they in the 79th minute, they got the final try. They had, because of injuries, they had their reserve hooker playing on the wing.
Brilliant.
Who was instrumental in the handling and his pace to actually set up that try for Marshall.
Pro 12, everybody. Pro 12. now, I've got a bit of trivia for you. What is the highest selling shirt in the British and Irish region?
Good question.
Well, in Britain.
In Britain. Well, British and Ireland.
Are you a quiz host as a job?
Yeah,
you do.
No.
Sorry, can you ask it again? Because I kind of didn't understand.
Okay, in Britain and Ireland, what's the highest selling club rugby jersey?
I would guess, just purely from when they travel away and the amount of people they take with them, I would say Munster.
You're 100% correct. That was easy. What's a second?
Okay. I do know this because I saw someone tweeted it to us.
I was staggered by this.
I am astonished.
I would have guessed something like Leicester Tigers.
you would have, but you'd have guessed wrong. It's Ospreys. And yeah, exactly.
What?
And it's not even like by a small margin. It's very good. Very Father Ted, that.
Wow.
And it's
Ospreys.
Ospreys sell more shirts than the other three regions combined.
But they don't have any fans.
If they do, they're not in the Liberty Stadium. So I don't know where that's. I don't know if Ospreys are buying their own shirts.
Is this some money laundering thing by some drug baron? Maybe I've been watching this. I think I've been watching this Narcos show on Netflix a bit too much. But
I do wonder.
But money laundering. But maybe it's like, oh yeah, honest to God, we sold 4,000 shirts. That's why we've got this big pile of cash.
And they're just burning Osprey shirts like in oil barrels at the back of the Liberty. I reckon it could be something. Do you know, like back in the day when you needed to get to number one in the in the charts? So the record company go out and buy all the records. I think something like that's kind of happening because who buys them?
They might have made a mistake when they were ordering the shirts. So they need to order 5,000 and they actually order 50,000 from the manufacturer. So they've got all these shirts and they're just like
quid a pop car boot sales.
Well, they're using, put a biomass boiler in the stadium and use them to heat the place.
I wonder, right, if we're going to be watching like some news report on Africa in like 3 or 4 years' time. Do you know the way that like you sometimes see like the Super Bowl champions? There's two shirts, isn't there? There's Super Bowl champions for to Patriots and then the losing team. They ship off all the losing team over to Africa. I reckon we're just going to find a ton of Ospreys shirts in Rwanda somewhere
on children in need.
Yeah, exactly. God, Ospreys have got a huge following. Truly international club.
And the Green King IPA Championship started as well this weekend, but again, it's not the World Cup. So good luck to all the teams that were involved in that. I didn't really look at the...
Guy Armitage got a hat-trick for London Welsh.
Well,
did he now? Oh, that was quite a good game. That was like a one-point victory, wasn't it?
Or
2-point victory.
33-35, I think.
I think you were correct, JB.
Well done.
I'm in touch with the Championship. what position does Guy play?
Centre.
I thought he did.
So that tournament's underway as well. So there's plenty of rugby to keep us ticking over in the next 2 weeks. But frankly, Friday the 18th is where it's at. And we will be doing our special World Cup preview podcast next weekend. So subscribe on iTunes, download the Acast app, keep listening, give us your thoughts about things you'd like during the World Cup. Follow us on Twitter and get involved because you could become content for the next podcast. But until next time, JB.
Thank you, Tim.
Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.
Absolute banter flying around already.
Lads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.